Thursday night at 8:30 means the arrival of our friend Howard Levitt, Canada's top employment lawyer, Levitt, Shake, Chaudhry & Swan, employment and labor lawyers. Howard is here to take your calls, answer your questions about your employment situation. Howard Levitt, welcome back to the show.
Barb DiGiulio, thank you, as always, for having me.
So great to have you on. I know you're very, very busy. You're on with Jerry every day at 10. You have your own show on Sundays, so we appreciate you taking the time to join us and help our listeners with their employment situations.
Well, it's an exciting time in employment law right now because people are quite attuned to it because of Governor General Payette.
We're going to talk about that in a moment. I've got a caller that I want to get to, and then I've got a number of stories I'd love to get your take on. 416-872-1010. Text us at 71010. Howard Levitt is here answering your employment questions. James got the call in early. Hi, James. Go ahead with Howard.
Yes, hello. I'm in a situation where I'm teaching. It's a private college. And they have us under contract, so there's no deductions. Now, for the last year, 2020, the payments went into the personal banking account. Now, over Christmas, we had to hustle to get together a business account, which meant a whole new name and a bank account. But now they've come back at, after making the first payment, they've come back at us and said it's got to be a corporation account.
Well, I don't understand why there any of these things happened. I guess they're trying to take the position that you're genuinely an independent contractor when you're not legally. You're an employee, and they're trying to make it look good to Revenue Canada if they're ever audited that you're genuinely an independent contractor, saying you have to be incorporated because it looks more like an independent contractor for paying money to a corporation than to a person. But frankly, Revenue Canada doesn't care. They look at the substance of it. And if you're working there on a regular basis, then you're an employee. You're not an independent contractor who's someone like me as a lawyer. You can call me, a client can call me tomorrow and use me, and then the next day they could pick a different lawyer. Or if they call me, I can say, no, I'm good. I'm too busy. I'll do other work. Unlike an employee who's regularly bound to do the work for the hours or days a week that they're obliged to do that, week in, week out. That's your situation. Therefore,
yes,
you're an employee.
Is.
So the rest is all nonsense.
Okay, so do I have to follow through with the corporation?
Yeah, like, what can he say? Can he say something to his company?
I guess if he says, I'm really an employee at law, they're going to be upset with him and are going to be concerned he's going to sue them for wrongful dismissal or something. So it's a matter of how much you value your relationship with them. Maybe ask them to pay for the incorporation fees.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Okay. James, thanks a lot for the call. What is it a big deal to incorporate?
Well, I find if you're going to get a company off the shelf, so to speak, sort of a placeholder company, it's about, as I understand, when I've done it myself, when I've needed it for my business, it's about $1,000 or so.
Okay. But in terms of being a contractor, you don't have to be a corporation?
No, you don't have to be a corporation, but to be a contractor, the courts will look at employment standards and everyone relevant taxes will look at the substance of the relationship. Are you genuinely somebody who works on a regular basis with one principal as a worker? Or are you someone who has multiple clients, can come and go as they wish, has no set hours, has no set days, and is retained when the whim of the other side and can say yes or no at the whim of the other side and possibly has your own employees? That's what an independent contractor is. And therefore, you know, Barb, that 90%+ of people calling themselves independent contractors are not. They're employees.
Right. And companies, I think you've told us this before, companies can have a certain amount of independent contractors versus employees.
No, there's no rule on that. You could have all employees, you could have all independent contractors. But
right. But you don't have to have one or the other.
No, you don't have to be. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you can have both. But it's going to be pretty hard to operate a company on nothing but independent contractors. There will be some people that regularly come to work, and those people are employees by definition.
Right. But so are a lot of people who are told they're independent contractors.
Oh, as I say, 90%+ of people who think they're independent contractors are really employees.
416-872-1010. Howard Levitt is here. Scott is up next. Hey, Scott.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead with Howard.
I had a question about, I guess it's technological change in the workplace, but also privacy concerns. my coworkers and I have all been handed brand new phones. It's fairly obvious by the phone, because it's the latest and greatest, that it has, you know, location software turned on that you can't turn off, and like a central management system with that phone. What are the, not the limits necessarily, but are there certain privacy things that I should be concerned about or should have been told about if we didn't set up with this?
Generally, no. Generally, if the employer wants to know where you are during the day, so they put a GPS tracking device in your phone or your car or your truck. If it's a company truck or the company phone, they have every right to do that. Mm-hmm. If you're working remotely, and they can put what I call tattleware on your computers, in which they know exactly what you're typing and look at what you're doing because you're supposed to be working. If it's a personal phone device, and they should not have the right after hours to be looking at what you're doing on the internet or making personal investment decisions with your broker or anything else. But if you're doing it during the workday, they do. So there should be some ability for them or for you to shut it off after hours.
But are they obligated to tell you that that's the case?
Yeah, they may have a general policy saying that all company equipment is our property, and we have a right to observe what you're doing at any time, and not be more specific than that.
Okay, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
All right, Scott. Thanks a lot for the call. Sounds like it's something new, and people are just suspecting that they're being tracked.
I mean, probably are.
Yeah.
He's probably right. Look, employees are working from home, employers are not getting the productivity, and employers want to make sure, and the data is, that the longer people work from home, the lower the productivity is. The Annaly Productivity Study of the Canadian Workforce has shown that. So employers are getting increasingly frustrated. They found it to be a short period of time, it's a longer period of time. So they're deciding to track what they're doing so they can find out people who are malingering and fire them.
And I guess the other option, too, is if you are given a work phone, after hours, just put the phone down and don't do anything on it. Like, you don't have to carry it with you everywhere you go.
Exactly.
All right. Howard Levitt is here, 416-872-1010. He is Canada's top employment lawyer, and he's going to be taking your calls until 9 o'clock. Alex is next. Hi, Alex.
Hello. Hi, Bart. Long-time listener.
Thank you.
A question to Howard. I was hired by agency to work for a subsidiary of American company here in GTA area. Work started on December 7. However, amid absence of equipment, actual training started on December 14. When it comes to Christmas break, I was told that because I don't have enough training to do work by myself, and my trainer goes to Christmas break, I should sit at home, I worked from home actually, but I wouldn't be paid for this week, and I was suggested to apply for government assistance. My question is, and of course when person came back on January 4, again, I start, my training started and work started. Question is, how to be in this situation? Does company have right not to pay at all, or maybe should pay something, because it is not my fault that trainer took Christmas break all week of December, December 28, I think.
Okay.
Till January 4.
Let's break things down, because you put in too many facts and then people get confused on what are relevant facts. It is not relevant that you're hired through an agency. Your case, okay, if you have one, may be against the agency, not against the company you're working for every day, or maybe against both. So let's put that aside, because it really isn't relevant in answering your question. They're giving you a break because the person who's training you isn't available. So a short time after starting, you're given this break. And that's a function of what the job description was, what the terms and conditions were. If you were told you're going to be hired full-time, permanent, going forward, or at least for several months going forward, then, of course, you have a claim for lost income for that period of time. If you're told, we're going to send you out to do a work for this company when you're needed, and that's the only time you're going to get paid, which sometimes happens with agency employees, but it could happen with a regular employee, too. I'm not hiring on a permanent indefinite basis. I'm just hiring you for when I need you. I'm going to call you in week by week when I need you. And if that's the deal, then you're not entitled to be paid when they don't need you. Whatever the reason is for they're not needing you, maybe it's their own carelessness. But if the deal is you'll only be paid, I mean, the deal when you start is you'll only be paid for the weeks you work, then that's what you'll be paid for. If the deal is you're going to be hired for 5 months, you'll be paid for those 5 months, then you have a claim for the time you're not being paid.
Robert, so if I understand you correct, company was not right when said I would not be paid because trainer is not available and I cannot do job by myself.
That's not what I said.
No.
I said if your deal is that you're only paid the weeks you work, then it doesn't matter why you didn't work. You only get paid for the weeks you work. If your deal is you're going to have a job for the next 5 months and be paid for the next 5 months, then if you're not paid, for whatever reason, you're entitled to be paid. It's a function of what your deal is. And since you're working through an agency, there's a very good chance that you have a deal, just because that's how a lot of agencies work, that you're only going to be paid for the time you work. But I don't know that, obviously.
Thank you for the call, Alex. Is the question also around, were you told, like, you know, he's got this trainer. So were you told that if the trainer's not there, you're not able to do your work? Because
he
it
might
seems...
have been told that, but more likely, the real question, that probably didn't happen. More likely, the deal, there's either a deal that he's paid for when he works, yep. or there's a deal that he's just got a job for the next 5 months, in which case he should be paid every week. It doesn't matter whether the trainer's not there or not, like any regular employee.
Okay. We are in the middle of our employment law segment with our friend Howard Levitt, Canada's top employment lawyer, Levitt, Shake, Chaudhry & Swan. You can hear Howard with Jerry Agar every morning at 10. And, of course, on the Employment Law Show, Sundays at 1. 416-872-1010. Dave is on the line. Dave, thank you for holding, and go ahead with your question.
Hey there, Howard. I just had a question. I work for a transportation company that does a lot of local transportation. I drive a transport truck, but for the last 2.5 years that I've been working with them, I haven't earned very much overtime pay at all. Now, I am paid hourly, but they don't have to pay me until after 60 hours in a 7-day period. I'm just wondering, how do they get away with that?
Are you a federally regulated employer, or does your company go across the border, or
no,
across
that's
the
thing.
Provincial
they don't
border?
Go across they don't go across the border, and they don't have any long-haul loads.
And you only stay within your municipality?
Well, we go to around the GTA.
Well, that's within your municipality. And you carry goods for other companies?
Nope. Oh, well, yeah, sorry. Yeah, we do. Yeah.
It's not your own product you're shipping around, like a uniform,
no.
Supplying uniforms back and forth. Okay. There's the Employment Standards Act has a 50-hour maximum, but as I recall, for unless you're a long-haul driver where there's an exception, it's still overtime over 44 hours a week. So you're entitled to be paid overtime over 44 hours a week at time and a half.
So I'm just wondering, how are they able to get away with claiming
they
that they're a federally regulated?
Because no one's complained.
Because you don't do anything.
Yeah.
Well, then maybe I should do something about it.
What should he do, Howard?
Go to Employment Standards and file a claim and say anonymously he wants to protect himself that this is going on at this company and they should go and do an audit.
Oh, okay.
And they will, and then him and a lot of others. Now, he could file his own complaint, and if he does that and then take reprisal against him, there's a reprisal remedy under the Employment Standards Act, which is probably the most powerful thing Employment Standards has. So, on the other hand, he probably won't have a long career because there'll be so much animosity in the workplace. They won't fire him, but they won't like him either.
Right.
So do it anonymously.
Okay.
All right, Dave, thanks a lot for the call. That actually brings me to something I wanted to ask you about, something I caught a bit of this morning. There are very, very few times you would recommend people go to Employment Standards. Is that correct?
That is correct. It is suicidal if you've been fired to go to Employment Standards, financially suicidal. Because let's assume somebody's entitled under Employment Standards to 4 weeks' pay. That same person may be entitled to 14 months' pay in court. But once you go to Employment Standards, you then cannot sue in court for wrongful dismissal damages. So your employer will say, you know what, the loss gives you only 4 weeks' pay. Call this number and we'll prove it to you. And we're going to give you 5 weeks' pay. So they call the Employment Standards branch, say, yes, you're only entitled to 4 weeks' pay. Quickly sign the release and then find out later from your show that it's actually 14 months' pay that they would have got in court, and it's too late.
Why would it be so different between what employment standards says you should get and what you can get if you hire a lawyer?
Well, let me ask the question differently. Let's assume you're making $100,000. Let's assume you're making $60,000 a year. Under employment standards, all you're entitled to is $14 an hour, which is about $27,000 a year. The fact is, you're still entitled to your $60,000 a year if that's your deal. And similarly, the court has standards they've developed over time as to what wrongful dismissal damages are, but the government has imposed minimum standards every employer must pay without complaint, without recourse, without having to go to court. And as wrongful dismissal damages have escalated dramatically over the last few decades, employment standards have stayed essentially the same.
Okay, that makes sense. Howard was on with us earlier in the week talking about former Governor General Julie Payette. The latest on that story, multiple former employees say they are considering legal options in the wake of a blistering report into claims Payette created a toxic workplace culture, verbally harassed staff, engaged in some cases of unwanted physical contact, and apparently some former staff members are now actively trying to get their jobs back. Howard, let's talk first about legal options. Do they have any?
Yes. In fact, that's going to be my post column for this Saturday.
Oh, I can't wait.
They can sue for constructive dismissal of those who've resigned. That does not give them their jobs back. But the government may decide to give them their jobs back as to placate them and to placate public opinion. But legally, they could sue for constructive dismissal, which is the same thing as wrongful dismissal, but a sufficient abusive treatment allows people to resign and sue as if they've been fired. They can sue for negligence, because Trudeau and the government knew about this for a long time and did nothing. And if people can show damages from having to stay in that workplace, that toxic environment, and have had, for example, mental distress reactions or other reactions, or had to quit, that's negligence actions. Or thirdly, they can sue if they can show that their conduct was either reckless or intentional. They can sue for what's called intentional infliction of nervous shock, which is essentially intentionally inflicting mental stress on someone. So that's a lot of potential lawsuits.
Do you come across people like that in workplaces? You know, like maybe a company wants to get rid of someone, or people are complaining about this person, like the people who really create a toxic culture.
Usually they get drummed out. The Payettes don't last very long. And what's ironic is her job is cutting ribbons, effectively.
Yeah.
It's ceremonial. It's being statesmanlike. So behave like this, like such a bully. It's not like she's a litigation lawyer. I'm half laughing. That's not what she's supposed to be. She's not supposed to be this abrasive, tough gunslinger. She's supposed to be a graceful statesperson. And she's the antithesis of that from everything we've read. Mm-hmm. So why did she get hired when she has a history of that? Why did she get hired when she got charged with attempted assault in Maryland, when she ran over a pedestrian some years ago, didn't get charged, but that's her history. And then they start hearing about this, and Trudeau, instead of putting a stop to it a year ago when this all comes out, continue to support her. What message does that give to the employees under? They've got no support. They've got no Trudeau supporting their oppressor.
Sure.
It's really outrageous. So what I would do is, I always put it in my political angle, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
I were in government right now in any of the opposition parties, I make this a cause to make it a parliamentary amendment to the Governor General's Act to exclude severance for her of $350,000 a year with benefits, and let Trudeau defend her. Let Trudeau defend spending millions of dollars of taxpayer money for the rest of her life to her in the court of public opinion. It's foolish that hasn't already happened.
Just to make one quick clarification, and it doesn't change the story, but just to be that, apparently we looked into it, and you may know this, there was a charge and then it was withdrawn.
Yeah, okay.
But just to say, just want to be clear and on the record, doesn't change anything.
She was charged.
Oh, I know.
Is that what you want for attempted assault, and she ran over a pedestrian separately? Is that, those are two separate instances. Is that who you want as your Governor General?
No.
No.
And I don't want to pay the severance and expenses for the rest of her life.
Right. And that's something the government can do something about. So we really need some of the opposition parties to put forward that legislation and let Trudeau try and defend the court of public opinion giving her millions of dollars.
Let me read a couple of these text questions, see if we can cover any of them. Somebody says, what is the law surrounding the use of a business cell phone for personal use when it hasn't been said you can't use it for personal use?
If it doesn't say you can't use it for personal use and they give you a cell phone to use, then you can use it for personal use.
Okay. As an employer, how do I decide whether to hire a contractor or employee for a job? What would CRA look for?
They look for what the job was. If it's they're bringing them for a job for a day, it is a contractor. It won't be an employee. If it's someone who's going to be there every day and you want that continuity, it's going to be an employee. It depends on what you need them for, whether you hire an employee or an independent contractor. It's not as if these things are interchangeable. It sort of sorts itself out based on what you need them for. You don't really have a choice. If you're calling in someone occasionally to fix your plumbing, that's a contractor. If you're calling someone in every day or 3 days a week on a regular basis to do your bookkeeping, that's an employee, whatever you call it.
Howard Levitt, we call you awesome. Thank you so much for doing this.
You're better than I am, Barb. Thank you.
Great to have you on. He's Canada's top employment lawyer. We're lucky enough to have him every Thursday at 8:30. Howard Levitt of Levitt, Shake, Chaudhry & Swan, and he will be back with Jerry tomorrow morning at 10 and then on employment law Sundays at 1.